Okay, we're going to get started.
Tomorrow sometime.
The committee will come to order. I suspect our colleagues will be wandering in soon. We're just shy of a quorum, but we should be there in a few seconds. I'm going to hold off on the minutes here just so we can get right into our bill. Our first bill today is House File 302, Representative Peterson. And this bill we had laid over, so the chair will take that off the table at this point and renew. I don't know if I have to, Senator Erickson, do I need to renew the motion, you think, or I'm just laying it off the
thing?
Just bring it off the table, right? Okay, so Representative Peterson, introduce yourself for the record, and let's get going with your testimony. I also think you have a delete all amendment that you'll want to move here. Is that right?
I do, and my name is Representative Sandra Peterson, and I do have a delete all amendment, which you should have in front of you, and I would like to move that amendment at this time.
Representative Peterson moves H.O. 302-DE3 to House File 302, and this is amendment that will then put this bill in the shape that you want the committee to consider today. Is that
right?
Correct?
All right.
So
we decided that the bill was just a little bit onerous, a little bit complex, so we tried to simplify it and condense it and make it more easy, I think easier at least for people to comprehend. And so you see in front of you the revised version. And I would also like to, at this point, call up two other testifiers, Kate Benestru,
yes,
and Megan Waltz, and they will be here to also answer questions and to give some testimony.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. And if your testifiers can introduce themselves for the record and offer us their testimony, we'd be delighted. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Kate Bonestro with St. Paul Public Schools.
Good morning. Megan Waltz, Ready for K.
Welcome.
You know, we already had some testimony on this bill, and we talked a bit about the bill already. And just to refresh your memory, we talked about this is the three C's bills, the coordination, communication, and collaboration. And it's become very clear, at least to me as a teacher and a parent, and now a grandparent of a four-year-old child who has been in the system, that what we need are those three pieces if we're going to have an effective early childhood program. And I've struggled through all of those pieces in all three arenas. We know, particularly with disadvantaged families, that they must have access to high-quality, locally-based program providers that provide health care, child care, early learning, early intervention, and parent support if they're going to be able to navigate the system. And that kind of, this bill is a hub which provides that opportunity. It's within a district or a tribal school, and it would provide a delivery of services for families with young children that would be within the community. And too often there's little coordination between the school and the parents and the early care and the education providers, and no coordination with the kindergarten or what would be expected of a kindergartner when they enter the system. So this House file fosters communication, coordination, and collaboration among the public schools and those entities that provide the services with families that most young children use. And this strategy has already been used in some communities within our state, maybe not as comprehensive as outlined here, but certainly is effective in several communities within greater Minnesota and within the metro area. This would establish a grant program managed by school districts to create early childhood community hubs, and it promotes the coordination of high-quality early care and education programs and offers a way for communities to build the capacity of such programs within their geographic area. And now 60% of these grant funds would be available to districts or tribal schools who meet the requirements in which 50% of the previous year's school population is eligible for federal free and reduced lunch programs. So that's really targeted to those at most need. And the remaining 40% of the funds would not be means tested and is available to other districts who meet the requirements. And to the extent possible, the grants would be awarded to the governor's economic development regions in each county around the metro area. Now, the program components, as you can see if you've perused the bill, include a community needs assessment, a community advisory committee, collaborative partnerships among early childhood programs, such as Head Start, school readiness, and licensed and legally unlicensed child care programs. And it would also have other community partners and a provision for kindergarten transition activities and also an evaluation component. Applicants could also apply for additional funds within the hub to develop and implement a PK3 program. And that would be alignment of a high-quality preschool program, all-day kindergarten through third grade collaboration. And the grantees must provide a 15% match for any grant funding received, and the Minnesota Department of Education will provide technical assistance to the grantees upon request. And it also, this bill also expands the voluntary school readiness assessment to kindergartners. And we hope that, we would hope, we'll set some goals at least over a period of years to get to 100% of all kindergartners having an assessment before they enter the kindergarten school year. I think the it's an exciting program and one which would provide the kind of coordination that we would need. And I'm going to stress again that this is voluntary. It doesn't impose anything on any of the current providers. It simply provides a link so that when parents have questions, when they have concerns, when they need the resources, it's kind of like a one-stop shop where they can get the kind of information, the kind of coordination, and the kind of a kind of linkage that they need to be helping their child be successful in their school career. Whether it's, again, licensed or unlicensed daycare, parents need that kind of information, whether it's Head Start, early childhood, et cetera. Now, we have someone from the St. Paul school system who was here before, and that's Kate, and she's going to talk very briefly about her program again. I think that most of us were in a hurry when we heard about her program. We heard about two others, and so I'm going to ask her to talk a bit more about her, what she does in St. Paul.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. You did a terrific job of going through the bill and summing up its key components and purposes for it being here. We do have a quorum now, and so would you like to then move your amendment, HO302DE3, so we have that formally before us?
Yes. I would move House File...
Your amendment, DE3 amendment.
I'm sorry, the amendment, DE3.
Representative
okay.
Peterson moves the DE3 amendment. All in favor of that, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The bill is now before us the way you wish it for us to be debated. Ms. Benestrew, welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I was here a couple weeks ago and did give my testimony, but I just would like to review it again because it was a two-minute quick one. So anyway, I'm here because what we're doing in St. Paul Schools is a lot of strong collaboration with the child care community, and it mirrors a lot of what the strategies are in this bill here. I work in a program called Project Early Kindergarten. It's funded through the McKnight Foundation with the emphasis of preventing and closing the achievement gap. What we do is we work with child care community aligning what they are doing in their homes and in their centers with what is happening in the St. Paul Public Schools four-year-old program. We're looking at a systems change for transitioning those children and their families into kindergarten. And we're also providing a meaningful parent involvement opportunities, which allows parents to extend the learning at home, which we feel is very critical. We're currently working with 6 licensed child care homes and 12 licensed family homes. I'm sorry, 6 licensed child care centers. That's serving between about 190 children between the ages of 2.5 and the pre-kindergarten year. All of these participants are voluntary. And to qualify that they had to be in good standing with the child care licensing and they also had to serve low-income English language learners or children with special needs. As partners in this program, they agreed to attend monthly professional development trainings that integrate curriculum, assessment, and instruction. These trainings take place one night a month, so this is after a long day of work. They come to our trainings from 6 o'clock to 9 p.m. We've had two of our child care workers in the center. They've left their centers, and they've asked if they could continue coming to our trainings. They also agreed to meet weekly with an early childhood coach in their centers or their homes to help implement the skills that are taught at these trainings. The coaches are the licensed early childhood teachers employed through St. Paul Public Schools and Resources for Child Caring. We feel that this coaching model, along with the training, is a very effective model for capacity building in the early care and education community. Parents in the centers and the homes receive monthly tips about everyday activities they can do at home to build early language, literacy, and math skills with their children. They receive monthly information on steps to take to get their children ready for kindergarten, including access to health care and early childhood screening. They're invited to attend family events at their local schools. And they're receiving information about community resources that are available to families with young children. And then the children in the centers and the homes benefit from having experiences that are similar to the children in the St. Paul Public Schools 4-year-old programs. The support and the energy around this collaboration has been tremendous by the providers and the families, and we are already seeing very positive increases in school readiness skills in the children. And this training we started last March, and the coaching last September. So thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Fenestrel. Ms. Cardigan, or Cadigan, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I apologize. I assume you were Ms. Cadigan. Perhaps you can identify. Are you here to testify? Or
Ms. Cadigan was going to address the kindergarten assessment, and that was coming after, but maybe she could do that.
I'm sorry, Representative Peterson. I jumped the boat. I just I wasn't listening carefully. I had not had enough sips of coffee this morning. And I assumed that the second person up there was Ms. Cadigan, but I heard wrong. And so please proceed the way.
This is Megan Walls, and okay. Megan was going to add any pieces that we might have left out of our testimony because she's been very involved in working to put together this kind of model.
Okay. Ms. Walls, would you care to share any comments? And please identify yourself for the record.
Sure. My name is Megan Walls. I'm with Ready for K. Just briefly wanted to say that Ready for K supports this bill. We think that it's a first step to building coordinated early childhood systems in local communities.
Terrific. Thank you. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the pieces that I did leave out, or at least touched on lightly, was the kindergarten assessment, and that's at the very beginning. And that, as you know, is being administered on a voluntary basis now. And this bill would set some goals for administering it, you know, around the state. Hopefully we get to the point where we have a kindergarten assessment for all students who are entering kindergarten, and we have that as a diagnostic piece for teachers to work with, for schools to work with, and actually for the state to have some kind of picture of how we're doing in our early childhood programs and preparing kids for school. And at this point, Karen, do you want to make any comments?
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Karen Cadigan. I'm the Director of Outreach and Public Policy at the University's Center for Early Education and Development. I'm here to say a little bit about the school readiness assessment, although I have to, of course, defer to the department with any technical questions or that kind of thing, but hope I can be useful in an overview. As you know, the Department of Ed has used the kindergarten readiness assessment for 3 years to get a handle on how ready are Minnesota's children for school. A few really important clarification points I want to make about this tool, because I've heard we've heard the words like diagnostic and decision making thrown around. The purpose of any kind of assessment, no matter what kind of tool it is, is to make a decision. And so a really important, the most important thing in considering an assessment tool is what is the decision to be made. The Minnesota Kindergarten Readiness Assessment is not a decision-making tool to diagnose children in the sort of medical way that we think of it. Rather, it is it serves two purposes. One is that it informs teachers what they can do for a certain child. It's based on the work sampling system, which is a very commonly used tool across the country. And in fact, one of the reasons that the Minnesota tool was chosen to be the work sampling system is because so many kindergarten teachers are already familiar with it. So it informs teachers sort of where is a child proficient in progress or not yet proficient in those five domains that we've heard a lot about, language, literacy, physical development, personal social, the arts, and mathematical thinking. The reason that it would be useful to expand the tool to statewide use is it gives a sense of how ready are our children for school, and it helps us keep an eye on the progress as we make changes to the system and think about how ready certain children are. It does not, I really want to emphasize this, preclude children from entering school. It's not a screening tool in the sense that it's tied to decisions about an individual child being able to go to school or not. A final interesting, I think, point about the Kindergarten Readiness Assessment is that the Department of Human Services used it in fall of 2004 to look at children in accredited child care centers and found that of that small sample, many more of the children, even children from low-income backgrounds and children whose parents had a low education level, those two things usually dictate risk, even those children in accredited centers had higher rates of readiness. So that's an example, I think, of how if it were expanded more broadly throughout the state, that it could inform communities and also state decision makers a little bit better about tying programs to outcomes. Thank you for the opportunity, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Cadigan. We do have a couple questions. Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Peterson, as I understand it, the pre-kindergarten through grade three grants, the schools have to have all-day kindergarten. Is that correct?
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, that would be the preference, certainly. I'm trying to remember if it was specified as all day. That would certainly be the preference, and it would be with the idea that they would follow a model of a research-based kind of preschool situation and all-day kindergarten, and preferably in one site. And the research is based from the University of Minnesota on what constitutes a very good early childhood program. It also comes from the Governor's Summit from this summer, where a group of experts in the field did meet this past summer with the Governor's Summit and determined what would constitute an excellent program. And those are the components that are included in this P3 program that you see before you. So that's an attempt, at least, to put in place some of the best research that we have around early childhood programs.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Peterson, I don't know if it's a concern or not that I have, but if the legislature doesn't pass all-day, every-day kindergarten this year, will this preclude a lot of school districts from taking part in this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, I don't think so, because part of the grant would provide some assistance in that, and also the school district would then have to make a decision to probably use some funds. And when we're in districts with high need, they could use some of the compensatory dollars that they're currently using. Many districts are currently using compensatory dollars to fund all-day kindergarten programs. And as you can see, 60% of those dollars do have to go to districts with high need. And so the other 40% would have to look at within their district and say, can we afford this? And within their grant, put together those resources.
I'm Representative Peterson. I'm looking at your language on page 4, line 415. The question that Representative Rodal has asked relates to the pre-K 3 program, not to the first part of the bill that has the both the voluntary assessments and the hub idea.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Gutwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Testifiers, I have two questions. One of them is this targeted at at-risk kids or all kids?
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, it certainly is focused on at-risk. It's targeted at-risk, and the 60%, those districts that have 50%, what is it, 50% free and reduced lunch. So it is targeted at those students, yes. But now they may be in a class, certainly with some other students who potentially don't meet those criteria in order to have a full class of kindergartners or preschool children.
Representative Gutwald.
Mr. Chair, a second question would be, what resources are districts being asked to commit to this? Space needs, staffing needs, what additional resources are districts going to have to commit to this effort, this
right.
hub?
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gottwald, as it says in the grant, they will need to hire, certainly the superintendent will have to have some time to oversee the program or his or her representative, and then they would hire a staff person. But again, that's part of the grant resources, to hire a coordinator for this kind of program. And so the only thing that is absolutely required is the 15% match, and that could, at the end they will have to have a 15% match in order to be part of the program.
Representative Gutwald.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, I'm also wondering about space needs. I mean, is this going to become an office space, a center within the school district buildings, or could this be housed elsewhere in the community?
Mr. Gottwald, many of the districts have space for, that kind of thing. I know in my district they would have the space because they have some buildings. But if a district doesn't, it certainly doesn't have to. It could be in some other building within the district, something that would have oversight of the district, but it certainly doesn't have to be in the offices or the schools within the district.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Peterson. Now, we already weight the students at a higher level than middle school, but test scores show that we really are having problems with the middle school group. So why aren't we funding these groups instead? This has been a concern of mine. I'm on three education committees, and everything that we come across is that we're doing a real good job at these early years, but we're having a problem with the middle school and upper grades. So why should we be funding this group?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we actually ought to be funding all of them. However, I'm convinced, and I have worked in the early childhood area, the middle school area, and the high school, and I'm convinced that if we haven't done a good job with our preschool and our grades through third grade, we have children who have a deficit that they carry with them all the way through the rest of their school years, and that includes the middle school. We must address the needs of these children early on, their literacy skills, their ability to function in the classroom, their all of the kinds of readiness skills that we know are important to success by third grade. And so I think all of the research, and certainly the research that's been done even by the economists, shows by many, many standards that if we don't put our money in the early years, we're missing an important component of success in later years.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative
Detmer. Representative Peterson. Now, I know part of the bill, how do we exactly expect this program to promote the school readiness for children before birth?
Representative Peterson.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative. before birth. Certainly there might be parents who would come and ask about pregnant mothers who may come and say, I need some advice here about early parenting, about how, when I take this child home from the hospital, what am I going to do with this child? We have 16-year-olds, even 14-year-olds who are having babies who really don't know what to do with those children. They need some advice, or they may come to a center and ask for that kind of advice. They may even ask for health resources or counseling resources. And so it could start as early as before birth. But my sense is that most of them will start after the child is born, and many hospitals already have someone who goes to the hospital as kind of a hospitality person who greets the parent, who kind of offers some services, some mentoring. And we, you know, in a hub, we could provide that kind of mentoring, kind of assistance for parents who wish to have some guidance. And so it ought to start early on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Peterson. I'm still going back to what, you know, the comment on the all-day kindergarten, because on page 4, line 4.15, it does say the hub has to provide all-day kindergarten that builds on children's pre-kindergarten experiences. Does that... I don't think we're going to have enough money to fund all-day kindergarten for everybody, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm just being a realist here. And should we change the wording in that bill? Does it hurt the bill to have all-day in there?
Representative Peterson, Representative Wardlow, again, this is a grant program. And as I've already commented, most districts already have some all-day kindergartens. I'm going to take my district of Robbinsdale. We have all-day kindergartens in all, I think, every school. And this would provide some ability, perhaps, to expand. And you've already said we might have some expansion of all-day kindergarten. So hopefully there will be at least some new resources for all-day kindergarten. All-day kindergarten is really being targeted in districts right now. They're using Title I funds to provide it, compensatory dollars, any dollars that they can find to provide all-day kindergarten for those children at risk, and then sliding fee scales for those children who can afford to come but can afford to pay. And so they exist already. This grant would certainly provide an incentive and an opportunity, hopefully, for districts, if they don't have all-day kindergarten, to consider it. I doubt that they would apply for the grant if they feel they can't have any in their district or can't afford any in their district.
And Representative Peterson, as I read the bill, it seems that applies to the third component of the bill, which is the pre-K to 3 program. I imagine that districts that don't have an all-day kindergarten program can still apply for the Early Childhood Community Hub Planning.
Yes, they could.
Implementation grants.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson, Demmer, and then we're going to move on to, we have another person that wants to testify, and we'll circle back to questions. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Peterson, on page 4 of the delete all, beginning at line 4.7, actually 4.8, would you explain to me what appropriate community early care and education partners would be? Because they're the only ones who can participate, it sounds, the way the clause is presented. Provides high-quality pre-kindergarten programming for 3- and 4-year-olds with appropriate community early care and education partners. What does that mean?
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, I'm going to also ask... maybe Karen, I'm reading this to say that you would have a program for 3- and 4-year-olds in that would be set up, that would be coordinated with other education partners within the hub or within the district, particularly within the district, so that there would be a coordination of the curriculum, of the kinds of skills that would be needed as they enter kindergarten. It would be for professional development and that exchange of ideas that's already been discussed here by Kate as she's worked through working between daycare centers and within the St. Paul School District. And so this would say that within the school district, you would have that same kind of coordination of services between the preschool programs and the K-12 system, or the K-3 system, excuse me. Karen, maybe.
Ms. Cadigan.
Yes, I'd be happy to comment on that. In addition to my current work at the university, it's important to note that I worked in public schools for 7 years, initially with middle schoolers with behavior problems, Representative Detmer may be interested to know, and got involved in early childhood issues because of my interest in prevention. One of the ongoing concerns, I think, of this in some ways fantastic patchwork quilt of early childhood services we have is that there's difficulty leveraging private resources and coordinating public resources because of the lack of coordination. Appropriate early childhood partners may include things like libraries. It may include public health nurses. It may include elder care programs where the elderly want to do some mentoring. It would really be open, I think, to what a local community is interested in. I don't know if Kate can comment more about examples in St. Paul.
Ms. Benestrel.
Thank you. In St. Paul, we are working with licensed family child cares and licensed homes. We also are bringing in any type of resources that we feel could help the families, help their children be successful in school, or just help the families with their basic needs. So I think that big coordination of services, that everything is out there, but families don't really know how to access it. So this would be a wonderful way to be able to bring those resources together.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Harris.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Representative Peterson, my only problem is with the word appropriate, and I think that what follows is probably what you're trying to use to define appropriate, but I think the word appropriate makes it sound as though there are some that are inappropriate. And are we making a judgment then about early care and education partners that we shouldn't put into policy? Maybe you mean by appropriate that they'd be upper level rating-based child care quality, you know, that they've used that system, that they, you know, are accredited under our statutes, that they meet Head Start performance standards. You know, I'm not sure, but I hope that you'll consider the use of the word appropriate and how offensive that can be in considering that, you know, there is a difference between appropriate and inappropriate. I just have trouble with the word, and maybe you would give it some thought.
Representative Erickson, as I read the language, it seems that there might even be a little bit of redundancy because we're identifying
I think so too.
Characteristics of those early care and education partners. Council has suggested that perhaps, given the testimony that we heard just now in the response to your questions, that perhaps a more appropriate word for appropriate might be coordinated. It seemed to me that there was an emphasis on coordination. And I'm wondering, Representative Peterson and Representative Erickson, if that might meet the intent of the author and perhaps satisfy some of your concerns, Representative Erickson. Representative Peterson.
Representative Mariani, I would be fine with coordinated. Appropriate may be a little bit ill-defined and judgmental, and so coordinated would be fine.
Representative Erickson, would you care to move that?
Mr. Chair, I would just delete appropriate. I don't see the need for it. I don't see the need for coordinated either. I just think that if numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4 support what a community early care education partner is, that you wouldn't need appropriate. That would just be my suggestion. But you can think about it.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, we certainly have an opportunity here before this goes before finance to change that, and I think I'll talk about it with some of the people who have put this together. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson. We have another person who's asked to testify, Dr. Karen Ephraim. And then I'll be asking if there's anyone else in the audience that wishes to offer testimony at this point on this bill, if they can also come forward. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Ephraim. If you could identify yourself for the record and offer us your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Karen Ephraim. I'm a mother of three, a pediatrician, and a policy analyst for EdWatch. I'm here to raise concerns about this bill. There have been several early childhood bills introduced this session that have merit, particularly because of parental choice elements. This bill, however, seems to be a classic example of overreach. It puts government in control of and setting norms for just about every aspect of child and family life. And I don't have a copy of the delete all amendment, so if the prenatal part has been taken out, I apologize. But to have this, the original bill, say from prenatal to kindergarten on line 1.22 of the original bill raises a whole concern for us. Another big concern is the psychiatric or psychosocial aspects of the grants. Line 411 of the original bill imposes a new early childhood psychiatric testing program despite major concerns about false positives, cost, intrusiveness, lack of consensus on diagnostic criteria or accuracy in young children by expert groups, and that the legislature has rejected for the past two sessions, and there's nothing in there about parental consent. The research base in this area is particularly murky, as I've testified before, and especially for young children in this age group. The bill brings into statute the early childhood indicators of progress, which is a resurrection of the the failed profile of learning type outcomes extended to the early childhood group, and deals with many controversial and non-academic topics. When the legislature rejected it for K through 12, I don't see why we would want to bring that down to the preschool age. The assessments are extremely vague and subjective, even in the academic areas, which I've talked about before, much less, again, the psychosocial areas. It over-identifies and has the potential to over-identify poor minority and boy students as academic and emotional failures at the beginning of their careers. The results of this assessment are being distorted to say that 50% of Minnesota children are not ready to learn, which is not only not true and an insult to parents and the effective programs that are out there, but it has no correlation with later elementary test scores. As Representative Detmer showed, it's, you know, in fourth grade and fifth grade when the evidence of early childhood effect would be most apparent that our children do the best. It is in middle school and high school where they have the most problems. The bill sets up No Child Left Behind style adequate yearly progress requirements for the kindergarten readiness assessment, and given the wide bipartisan discontent with No Child Left Behind and its federal control, mandates, high cost, and failure to close the achievement gap, why this body would consider asking districts to take this on even voluntarily for the preschool age is somewhat of a mystery. In addition, the language of the bill talks about the assessment being voluntary for districts, but it says nothing about it being voluntary for the individual students, and there's no discussion of parental consent when this assessment also brings up, again, not only academic issues, but also psychosocial assessment. And finally, it promotes early childhood programs whose claims of long-term effectiveness are not supported by the research evidence. And I can give you quotes on each and every one of the programs: home visiting, Head Start, kindergarten readiness, all-day kindergarten, and ECFE, which show that these programs do not have long-term effectiveness by people like the legislative auditor and national research. If this bill becomes law, there will be nothing left for parents, extended families, or private or religious organizations to do in raising children that is not under the purview of some government agency. It violates hundreds of years of tradition and settled law that parents are in charge of the raising, education, and medical care of children, especially young children, and at least four U.S. Supreme Court cases that I can think of from 1923 to 2000. My favorite one being Pierce versus Society of Sisters, which says that the child is not the mere creature of the state. Those who nurture him and direct his destiny have the rights, coupled with a high duty, to recognize and prepare him for additional obligations. I would ask that you let the parents of this state direct their own children's destiny.
Thank you, Ms. Ephraim. Is there anyone else that wishes to offer testimony on this bill? Representative Peterson, if you can then return. We have a couple more questions from Representative Detmer and Gottwald, and Representative Abler, and no?
Yeah, I do.
Representative Abler. Representative Detmer, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You can sit next to Representative Detmer.
Detmer.
That's right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Peterson, I'll give you my thoughts here in a couple of areas and ask you to respond. Ms. Ephraim touched on this a little bit. It's a voluntary program, and yet we're looking at assessing up to 100% of the children. It doesn't sound – I'm curious as to what voluntary is about that. That's one area that I'd like you to comment on. The other that I ask you to comment on is and 5 points, line 5.7, on 5.1 and 4.36 and 5.1, you talk about the grants must go to each county in the metropolitan area, and then in 5.7, it carries on for the whole sentence there, but basically is to whether or not to expand the program throughout the state. Is that intended, this is a metropolitan program, Representative Peterson, only, and then maybe it will go to Greater Minnesota if it works out? You're mandating all the money basically go to the counties in the metro area. And if you're going to go to, I was going to actually early on ask you how you thought this would work in rural Minnesota, and then when I saw this, I thought, well, maybe it's not intended for rural Minnesota. So those are my two areas, Mr. Chair.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, a representative. First of all, it does say that 40% of the grants would be distributed around the state in the governor's economic development area. I believe that's, I'm not sure where it's at, but it is in here that...
Sir Peterson's line 5.1, the economic development regions.
Right, economic development regions. So it is intended for around the state. And I see it working in Greater Minnesota because that's where it's being effective right now. I think Proctor has one. Grand Rapids already has some. What of a community hub? And real small communities could actually band together and form a consortium if they would want, especially if the cities and counties are very close together. But certainly it's intended to be, expanded throughout the state if it works. I mean, this is an evaluation to see if this kind of coordination can bring some sort of system to this fragmented early childhood system that we currently have. I don't even call it a system. Early childhood fragmented programs that we currently have. So it's intended to be effective out throughout the state. Your first question was, the assessment. It does say voluntary, and those are goals. The department would try to work to reach 100%. If that's possible, I don't know. But it is a goal, and it is something that districts would have to determine at a local level. You know, quite frankly, having been a kindergarten teacher at one point in time, I don't think there's a kindergarten in the state that doesn't do either a formal or informal assessment of their students when they come in. They have to. They have to know what their skills are when they come in. They have to know about their ability to interact with other students. They can do it visually. They can do it through a work as was already discussed. They can do it through an informal or a formal assessment. The reality is that you have to know where each child is in order to help them to grow, to help them to become proficient in an area. If you see that a child has no literacy skills, they come in and they don't know their name, they don't know their colors, you know that that's something you're going to have to work on. If they don't, if they have some physical skills that don't allow them to be proficient in that area, then you work on that. Every teacher does either a formal or informal assessment. I think we need to look at a little more formal way of judging. I'd like to see, I think actually it benefits the child to have something that is consistent in terms of an assessment that doesn't rely just on the judgment of a teacher, but actually uses the same criteria for each child and kind of looks at them. But there's certainly a lot of subjective analysis on the part of the teacher when you're looking at a child's ability as they enter kindergarten.
Representative Abler and then Representative Gutwald, and then I want to move to a vote on the Peterson motion. Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, just a comment, actually. I've been in a couple committees where there's been a significant delete all brought by the author, and a witness comes and testifies to what was in the old bill, and that's difficult for the public, as we talked on the floor yesterday about, to keep up with what's in front of us. And so it's I don't know how to make it any better, but I know that there's a rule about those being available, but I don't know how you ever tell the public that there's a big change in a bill that's somewhat controversial. Just a mention of that. And so, good luck with that. But also, as we look at this is, got to be the fifth of such proposals like this in the early childhood area that I hope as you move forward with whatever the majority is going to craft, that you look to what's existing in my school district and in my county and find the strengths and find the weaknesses of those existing programs and build on that as well. And just instead of layering on a whole new program, I fear that the resources as limited as they're going to wind up being after we hear the news tomorrow, that a lot of the valuable ideas out of this could actually be gleaned and stuck into, tweaking what's already there just to make it go a little further. Just a thought. So. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Abler. And we did take up this bill a couple of weeks ago and did some vetting at that point. I think the committee felt that it needed some work, and yeah. So we had laid it over. I don't know how to answer the question about amendments. We certainly did try to make enough copies available for the public, but I apparently those got snatched up before the rest of the public can get it. Representative Gutwald, and then I want to move to a vote here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to belabor the point, but I hope committee members are open to the perspective that some are bringing. I think there is a concern with these sorts of proposals, Representative Peterson, that we are assuming that parents are not doing good enough, that therefore the state must step in and prepare them for kindergarten and assess them to some standard predetermined, when in fact what we should be doing is empowering parents and working with parents. And I don't see a lot of language about engaging parents. I see them listed usually at the end of a long list of people who need to be coordinated with. But that's really where we need to focus. We're all interested in good outcomes for early childhood, no doubt about it. I think we disagree about how to get there. My specific question was going to be about somewhat to what Representative Abler was speaking to, but we've taken testimony in the Early Childhood Learning Committee from groups like Initiative Foundations in Outstate Minnesota that are doing fabulous jobs coordinating and creating community-based programs for early childhood that have been developed by them, that have buy-in from the community, that embrace parents and work with them, and are doing very well. And yet this really does seek to begin to seed a statewide program whose goal is 100% participation by the year 2012. And I have a deep concern about that. So my question is, how would you coordinate with things, for example, like the Initiative Foundations that already in very many areas of the state are doing a very good job of coordinating and providing very effective early childhood tools and coordination?
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, I would think that the school district probably is already involved with that initiative, I would think. Now, I don't know enough about the initiative. I don't know if they discussed what the reaction, the role of the school district. I'm going to step back one step, however. I agree with you that parents are the most important factor here, particularly in early childhood. And if we haven't emphasized that enough, in this, we could look at making that language a little stronger. My sense is that parents are looking for a place where they can get information, where they can kind of see what's available, what might be best for their child. They have many questions that need answers, and I say that because I mentioned my four-year-old granddaughter. With parents who are middle class, who certainly know how to access most systems, but have found this idea of finding preschool programs quite an onerous task, because they want a good preschool program, and they wanted a place to go where they could get this information in their community, and found it very difficult because there are so many different programs, and they would have liked to have had one source as a parent to be able to access this information. Now, these are people who are middle class. What if you don't have those kinds of resources and are really looking for that same kind of service? I think we need to provide that. But then going back to the communities who already have something started, it seems to me that this would fit in beautifully. This says the school district then would form a hub, and I would think the initiative would fit beautifully under it. It probably should be part of it already. And it might provide additional resources to even enhance or enrich what's already going on.
Professor Gutlaub,
Mr. Chair, quickly. Speaking as a middle-income parent with a three-year-old and four other children who've gone before, I can tell you there are an awful lot of us out there in the middle-income category who are not seeking a hub for early childhood. We have been able to figure it out for ourselves. And that was why I asked my earlier question about, is this targeted at at-risk people, the people who really don't have the tools? And I think that's where we need to focus these resources. I think this goes far beyond that.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, I think it has to be for the whole community, certainly targeted for students at risk, but if it's there and available and people come in and ask, I think that information has to be available to the whole community. And, you know, we really do need to integrate students who are middle class with students who have needs. I mean, that is the purpose, I think, of some of these programs, and we find that students learn from each other, and that's good to have that integration. We don't want to isolate students who have all of those particular needs of learning. I think we want to integrate them into a preschool program that has a diversity of learning going on.
Representative Peterson renews her motion that House File 302 be recommended. House File 302 as amended. Be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the Early Childhood Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Peterson. Representative Slawick, House File 976.
We were just commenting.
And Representative Petrick, I'm wondering if you would be so kind as to move our minutes from February 22nd.
So moved.
Representative Dietrich moves adoption of the minutes from Thursday, February 22nd. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I hear a voice. Yes, I'm sorry. We're so late.
I see that we still have Benson, House File 803, calling it smart boards. I thought we'd changed that.
Yes.
Interactive whiteboard.
Right. Can I talk about it?
Miss Marin.
Hi.
You get to speak today.
That was the original name of the title before we had amended it, and that's why I have it in that way. I'm happy to change it, but that was the original title before it was amended.
My only comment on that is that it made it all the way to the House floor as still being called smart boards.
Right.
In the whatever the next step is,
I believe the amendment that we adopted will change that permanently in this bill. However, I think the minutes just simply refer to the fact that it was introduced that way and brought up in this way. Why don't we hold off and look at the minutes for a second to make sure that we're not doing something we shouldn't be doing, Representative Slawick? Would you care to move House File 976?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, I move House File 976 be recommended to pass and move to the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee.
Representative Slawik moves House File 976 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee for a re-referral to Early Childhood Committee. Representative Slawik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I also I wanted to let you know I'm going to be talking about House File 976. Representative Willie, I'm blanking on
which one is Dominguez.
Representative Dominguez. I'm sorry, all these 29 new members. I apologize. Representative Dominguez, we spent it.
Representative Slawik, you're in good company. Just ask Representative Greiling. Welcome,
sorry about
Representative
that.
Dominguez.
We have he has a similar bill, House File 580, and so we thought we'd hear them today. We had some time to talk about this on the floor yesterday, as you know, Mr. Chair. So what we're doing is proposing an after-school community learning grant program. Members, this isn't a new idea. We used to have after-school learning grants here at the legislature. What I'm proposing in House File 976 is using $5 million a year for competitive grants for after-school community learning experiences and opportunities. As I mentioned, there's no state funds right now that are for community-based learning opportunities during the non-school hours. All other state funds directed are targeted at prevention programs, such as pregnancy and crime prevention programs. Now, some of us will remember in 2003, the after-school enrichment program was unallotted. So we did have this. It was unallotted, and with 30 days, funds to several after-school and community learning programs were cut off. Over 160,000 young people were affected by these changes. Many people, young people no longer had access to programs as a result of these cuts. So I think, members, we're looking at a program that does a lot of good in the community. It helps kids in terms of what they're doing with their academic work after school, as well as keeping kids in good constructive programs. This particular bill incorporates the lessons learned from the old after-school grants and aligns the program with the outcomes with the federally funded 21st century programs to allow for easier and more consistent reporting across the state. We have several testifiers, which we would like to move to now. We'll have Ms. Laura St. LaCroix. Laura LaCroix. Sorry, Mr. Chair, I'm with the two-author thing, it's a little out of sync here this morning. So if you'd like to proceed.
Sure.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Laura LaCroix DeLune, and I'm the Executive Director at Youth Community Connections. And we are an alliance of both public and private organizations that either serve children and youth during the non-school hours or have a stake in serving kids after school. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about the importance of after school and community-based learning opportunities for young people. Many of you may know that young people have over 2,000 hours of discretionary time on their hands, which really equates to that of a full-time job. So we often think that the school day takes a young child most of their time. However, they have more time not in school than in school. Children of middle and upper-class families tend to have opportunities to engage in their communities in various different ways that children of lower income families do not have. This is really important because we know that when children learn in their communities and in informal settings, it helps contribute to their academic learning as well. We're really concerned about the disparities of these opportunities because we've seen access go away for young people. In fact, in the last 5 years in the state of Minnesota, we've seen an increase of 46% of 10 to 12-year-olds going home unattended and alone. We believe that after-school and community-based learning opportunities really provide young people the opportunity to build character, which we don't see kids getting access to during the school day. We see them getting access to skill building such as decision-making, leadership skills, all within the safety of their community and with caring adults. These skills really help complement a child's education and are essential to have access to in communities. We know that graduation rates for children and youth rise to 71% when young people have access to early childhood education opportunities.
And we know that it increases up to 91% when we continue making investments in children and youth during their school age years, so ages 5 to 18. We believe these investments are an important part of our community and contributing to the lives of children, youth, and families across the state. My colleagues are going to get into some of the more detailed work or detailed descriptions here. So let me introduce Brian Severson-Hall with MnSACA.
Welcome, Mr. Severson-Hall. Please identify yourself officially on the record and please offer us your testimony.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Severson-Hall. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota School Age Care Alliance and also a board member of the Child Care Works. Our organization supports after-school programs throughout the state by providing professional development and program improvement opportunities. Thank you for this opportunity, and I'm thrilled that this bill is being considered. Participants in after-school and community-based learning programs continue to have better attendance, better grades, more positive attitudes towards school, and higher aspirations for post-secondary education. After-school and community-based programs are an important part of the solution for addressing educational disparities. Adolescents who join youth programs are more likely to be active, engaged voters who are employed, economically self-sufficient, and overall happy with their lives and engaged in their communities. We believe involved youth, engaged parents, and supportive communities are critical in the non-school hours. After-school programs come alongside parents to provide youth with positive, engaged activities during their non-school hours. We believe youth development is community development. As youth develop, they help grow the communities that they are already a part of. They're a part of these communities long before they're 18. We like to have them actively involved, positively engaged, alongside their peers, alongside their parents, and alongside the other caring adults in their lives. I'd like to turn it over to Jen to talk about some specific programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Wright, please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jenny Wright. I'm the director of the Minneapolis Beacons Network, which is the collaborative of youth organizations, including the YMCA, YWCA, the Boys and Girls Club, and community education. And together, we turn Minneapolis public schools into community centers during the non-school hours. And in those community centers, we're able to offer programs for young people most in need in our communities. We offer structured activities, including cultural enrichment, academic support, leadership development, as well as jobs for young people. And we are working with young people in 7 Minneapolis schools. The Beacons Network is just an example of after-school and community programs that would benefit from this bill. And I'm just here to share with you the huge need that I'm seeing in the community for programs like these, as well as the impact that these programs can have. We're seeing a huge rise in juvenile crime in Minneapolis, and we are hearing from youth and from families that they just simply cannot learn if they're not feeling safe in their community and in their school. And after-school programs can truly contribute to that sense of safety in the community, as well as within the schools. Through our programs, we're able to provide safe places, opportunities for young people to develop relationships, positive relationships with each other as well as with adults. And we're also allowed to build on leadership skills, support families, and offer opportunities for enrichment. Another huge need, obviously, is for academic support. We're working with young people that are most at risk for educational disparities. And Beacons, for example, is serving 90% students on free and reduced lunch, 91% students of color. These students are truly benefiting from the after-school programs, those that can participate. We do have waiting lists, and we do continue to hear that there's a huge need in the community for more opportunities during the non-school hours. I just want to share with you a couple examples of the impact that after-school programs can have. In our Beacon centers last year, as reported by teachers, 86% of the young people improved academic performance, 84% were seen by their teachers as more motivated to learn, 100% of parents identified that Beacons helps their child do better in school, and 98% of young people said that Beacons helps them to like their school better and do better in school. So there's a direct connection between the role that after-school programs can play in the lives of youth and families and the support of their academic and educational outcomes. So thank you for this opportunity. There's just a huge need, and these programs make an incredible difference in the lives of youth and families. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. And in the spirit of full disclosure, I should tell the share with the committee members that I actually had a hand in writing the first iteration of this language over 10 years ago. It actually came from Representative from Governor Arne Carlson's office, and we worked very closely across partisan lines to fashion some meaningful activities for after-school opportunities for at-risk children. And so I had the privilege of being able to interact with a number of these programs over the years, and also subsequently saw some of the loss of services once we cut the program a few years ago under financial stress here. Representative Dominguez, one of the things that distinguishes you is that you also work directly with these programs. I wonder if you want to share a few quick thoughts, and then we have a couple questions from Representative Erickson and Representative Erdahl and Gutwall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the time coming to testify. Although my bill is not in front of you today, I hope to have a hearing on my bill shortly. I'm here on behalf of Representative Swalek's bill because I believe that we have similar bills and that we can work together and providing a big outcome on our bills together. As what was said earlier, I'm not going to repeat anything, but I gave a handout to all of you about the commitment to the kids and the commitment to the parents, the commitment to the schools, the commitment to the community. I think it is a process that we need to follow and reinstate. My bill is in a reinstatement bill, which brings back the original proposal that was put together by, again, yourself, Representative Carlos Mariani. Again, gracias for that. I just want to say also that it was a bipartisan effort that we pulled this bill together. Again, you mentioned, and I was going to mention that also, that our governor, Arne Carlson, proposed a big initiative for after-school enrichment program. This came together. In the original proposal, there was communities that were selected. But as you notice in the broader list that I've given you, it's a statewide program. It's not just a program in certain areas now. This is a statewide program that's going to help all our kids to succeed in school, academia. As you notice nowadays, science and math is very important within our school, all our districts, and we want to move forward in that arena. I also just want to say that this is a program, as you heard, that will help in our crime issues that are affecting all our communities with our youth. It's something that's going to help communities move forward, something that's going to help parents be involved within the initiatives of after-school enrichment programs. It's about all of us, really. And so, again, I'm not going to preach to you today. I'll have a time to do that. I just wanted to say that I appreciate your attention to these both bills, and I'm here to on behalf of Representative Swalek's bill today, and again, hopefully I will get a hearing on 580. Again, thank you for your time. It's always nice to come to this powerful group over here. You guys are my friends, I hope. Thank you for listening to us. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Again, I hope that you got all the information that I've given as a handout. So thank you again, Mr. Chair.
Muchísimas gracias, Representante Diputado Dominguez. Is there anyone else, before we get the question, anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Okay, why don't we get into questions, Representative Erickson? I'm sorry, we do have another. Please come forward, sir. I'm sorry. I didn't see you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representatives, my name is Richard Mammon. I'm the Director of Community Recreation Programs for the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. And I know not to to sell after the close, so it's a little, I'm sorry to come in. Other than to say what Representative Dominguez and Laura and distinguished colleagues is very accurate. This is a very important initiative. We know from our experience in 96, through those years that this funding was available, it made a big difference. In Minneapolis and throughout the state, but certainly in Minneapolis, we need to make a difference. We're losing far too many kids from the public schools, from organized education of any form, to crime. We need to build supports. It's hard for schools. It's hard for families. We have a very elaborate but yet weakening web of social supports and social services in Minneapolis that needs help in doing this. So please help us. Support these young people. We know it makes a difference. The reduction in crime that was proven by the Children, Families, and Learning when they evaluated this program promoted academic achievement, increased community participation, and citizenship. So please work with us to make this happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mammon. And I should say, committee members, Mr. Mammon is a legend in this area of work. Very distinguished career, and we're privileged to have you with us today. We have a number of questions, folks. We're going to have to make these quick questions. Representative Erickson and Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, where are we sending this bill?
Representative Erickson, this bill will be going down to, or over, to early childhood finance eventually, but all our bills will be referred out to the Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Slawik, under your program outcomes, could you explain to us how you measure school connectedness in line 115 and how one measures, or we would measure, the capacity of participants to become productive adults in 118? I know we can measure academic achievement, but how do we measure those other things since those are the expected outcomes?
Representative Slawik.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I'd like to turn to Ms. LaCroix to answer that.
Sure.
Ms. LaCroix.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the school connectedness would likely be measured by school attendance and behavior within the school day. However, when each program puts forward their proposal to the state of Minnesota, then it's up to the department to look at those proposals. But most likely we're going to be looking at school attendance because we know those are indicators of school success, as well as behavior within the classroom.
And then, Mr. Chair, how about the capacity of participants to become productive adults?
Mr. Chair and Representative, that would be measured in the character building skills such as leadership skills, decision making skills, having the ability to practice doing group work. These are really important skills, and we're hearing the business community saying that many of our kids are coming out of school not really being prepared, having practiced those activities and having opportunities to lead. It's through our after-school programs that many of the children have access to these opportunities, and so we want to be able to measure it in a variety of ways. But again, in each program's proposal, they would lay out how they would measure those.
Mr. Chair, one final question. Thank you, Chair Mariani. And to the testifier, will character education be a part of some of these programs, do you think?
Ms. LaCroix.
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, in many programs it is. It isn't always defined as character building because it's not usually the thing that's going to lead our adolescents or school-aged children to the programs. So it's usually embedded into the program or into a curriculum, and staff are trained around how to build those. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Peterson, Representative Nornes afterwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to know if this program intended for just new programs or existing, can it apply to existing programs as well? Expansion or support for existing programs?
Thank you, Representative. Representative
Carlos.
I believe that this is an open door program that we will take the existing programs if there's any left, because this program was non-existent since 2003. So we want to open up the door again and have new applicants, all applicants, those who want to work with after-school enrichment programs.
Representative Peterson.
This is such an important area. I actually have a bill, but I was bringing it through the Public Safety Committee because having met with the North Metro mayors and having a center in Brooklyn Park, it seemed that it was indeed a crime prevention piece that needs to be addressed. I mean, you know, crime prevention isn't just about more policemen. It is also about taking care of our youth and a multifaceted approach. And so maybe I'll have to consider this committee also as well, because I think also that the crime committee or public safety committee ought to be looking at these issues as a way to solve problems. But this involves a center that's a mosaic that's already in progress. It's been working for about 3 years. But again, they're all searching for resources to be able to fund their programs.
Representative Nordis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real quickly, Representative Slavik, as one of the co-authors of this bill, I just noticed that there's no Senate file. Is anything happening over in the Senate? Do you have an author over there?
Representative Slavik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nordis, you know, that was brought to my attention yesterday. We certainly sent it over to the Senate. Apparently, the senator did not follow through. So I will be in touch with the Senate about them picking up this bill and getting it through.
Representative Slavik, please let them know that the chair of the committee would be terribly upset if it wasn't a Senate chair, having spent quite a few time on this. Ms. LaCroix.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nordis, we do have a Senate file. It's Senate file 1223. It was just introduced yesterday in the Senate, and Patricia Torres-Ray from Minneapolis is authoring it.
Okay, ask
thank
and you.
You
shall receive.
Thank you very much.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Slavik, I did hear a couple of references to community education. Are community education programs eligible for this? And if they are, how many do you expect to be involved?
Representative Slavik.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, they would be eligible for the funding. Of course, they have to, one, you know, meet the criteria and be able to meet the program outcomes. It's hard for us to say at this point, again, because this has not been offered since 2003. I think that if this program is reinstated, you would find a number of community education programs wanting to do this. I mean, it's in, at least in our school district, that is where the after-school programs reside currently, is in community education.
Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is one-time money, so next year they have to reapply for the grant again and again.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wardlow, yes, that is how it would work right now, and that's why when there was an unallotment, it completely, the program was done. If you want to make it part of the base, I'd be happy for that promotion.
We'll work on that. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Slawick, you know, I support after-school programs. In fact, my after-school program is working on our dairy farm. But what age groups, now in the past, what age groups took part the most in after-school programs?
Representative Slawick. Ms. LaCroix.
Mr. Chair, I will ask Ms. LaCroix or Representative
Quickly,
Dominguez.
Please. Representative Dominguez.
Representative Carlos, Representative Dimmer, in the past, I was a recipient of those programs. We offered programs from kids from 10 years old on up to 17 years of age.
Representative Godwald.
Muchas gracias, Señor Chairman.
Por supuesto, Representative Godwald.
Just a quick question for the testifiers. How does this coordinate with things like Kids Stop, YMCA, Boys and Girls Club, all those other programs that are providing some of these same activities? And then I'll ask the second question quick so we can keep with it. Can we add in here, by chance, Representative Slawick, something that says a certain percentage would go to greater Minnesota communities? I noticed on the sheet that we were handed that a vast majority of this, and I'm not saying that's not necessary, but a vast majority of these grants have typically remained in the Twin Cities metro area.
Representative Slawick, on the second part of that question.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gottwald, you know, I would like to work with you on that. That is part of the difference between our bills, is kind of where the money is going. We are trying to do it based on need. So we can certainly have, there are programs, from my understanding, that were served in greater Minnesota. But when you look at aggregate need, it does, of course, wind up being more in the metro area. But you know, let's talk further about that.
Mr. Severson-Hall, on the first part of that question.
Sure. Absolutely. That would be a great part of it. In fact, my hope would be that this is more of an access issue. This certainly, we do coordination with programs like KidStop and St. Cloud, and those are current active after-school programs. The hope would be that the folks who apply for these grants would be adding to where children are not served. One of the representatives mentioned community education. Not all the community education programs have after-school programs. Those that the majority do, but those that don't typically are in greater Minnesota, and they need that support. I would hope that many of our greater Minnesota constituents would choose to apply for these grants, and we could provide them with that support.
Representative Slawik renews her motion that House File 976 be recommended to pass and refer to Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the Early Childhood Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Slawik, Representative Dominguez, and testifiers. Representative Slawik, House File 685, would you care to make a motion here?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 685 be referred to the Finance Committee and then re-referred to the Early Childhood.
We'll help you out here. Representative Slawik moves that House File 685 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee. A re-referral or a recommendation be referred to the Early Childhood Finance Committee. You have several testifiers, but we only have a few minutes. So please identify yourself for the record. Representative Slawik, why don't you tell us quickly what the bill does, though?
Mr. Chair, members, we figured it would be 9:20. It's 9:25. We knew this was going to be quick. We ask for your consideration. When we look at program schooling geared towards young kids and school readiness, we look at risk kids. The program that we're proposing today really serves the most at-risk kids in Ramsey County, primarily through an organization called Life Track Resources. Right down the street on University Avenue, they have the big mural on the side if you've been there. They have a therapeutic preschool program, and in that program they serve kids the most at need, and I will have my testifiers talk most about that. And I want to thank Cindy for coming, and I want to thank parent for coming, and I want to thank your daughter for coming today. So thank you.
Thank you so much for coming. It's so wonderful to see someone just a few years younger than I at the table. What a wonderful sight. Thank you for coming. Please identify yourself, and we're crunched on time here. So,
good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Cindy Toppin, and I'm the Vice President of Programs at LifeTrack Resources. Our early childhood and families programs are dedicated to the most at-risk and vulnerable children. We have a therapeutic preschool and home visiting program, the only one in Ramsey County, particularly aimed at children who may have violence or abuse and neglect in their lives. We help the most fragile children heal, develop new relationships, and learn those school readiness skills that are going to help them throughout their lives. Why Ramsey County? Every year in Ramsey County, there are over 800 children under the age of 5 in child protection in need of early intervention and learning services. It's currently estimated that only 15% of these kids receive early childhood services. Currently, with the new mental health screening that's going on in child protection, 50% of the kids under the age of 5 are failing that mental health screening. Now, not every child that we serve is in child protection, but we are serving families where poverty, abuse, neglect, violence, homelessness, chemical dependency, physical disabilities are the norm. Most of our children have 5 or more of these factors. I know that you know that early childhood services work, but the research is based on programs like ours where you're dealing with the most at-risk children and you're combining services for the children, preschool therapy services, mental health services for children who've had those kinds of issues, and home visiting services that provide help for those parents to meet basic needs and to learn how to be better parents. In the interest of time, I'm going to not go on about some of our other early childhood home visiting programs, but instead I want you to be able to hear from Karen, one of our parents who's experienced our services and families together, and hear her story.
Wonderful. Welcome, Ms. Corbett, to the committee. Why don't you just say your name for the record, because we're taping this, and then give us your thoughts and your testimony today.
My name is Karen Corbett. This is my youngest daughter, Jayla. This is her third year at LifeTrack. Son that's also been at LifeTrack. We started LifeTrack 3 years ago after I had a bout with cancer and my husband had just entered chemical dependency for alcoholism. When my children entered the program, they would not communicate outside of our home. They would not talk with other people. They would only interact with family members. Since being at LifeTrack, They have not only learned to interact with their peers and other adults, but they've learned to communicate with their words. Jayla specifically has come out of a shell. When she would go out into public, she would cover her face. She would not look at people. She's now able to not have to put something over her face. She's more assertive, so she can get her needs met. She's able to express and recognize her feelings. And really, when Josiah and Jayla, my two children, entered this program, life was, for them, extremely sad and under a lot of duress. Since I've been at LifeTrack, I've had another bout with cancer. LifeTrack has not only continued to help my two children, but they've helped my family as a whole. They have helped, you know, my other children get some of the resources that they needed to be able to deal with my chronic illness. And I just really believe that LifeTrack is, it saved my kids' lives. It's helped. It's made the difference for my two youngest children to be able to be productive members of the community.
Thank you, Ms. Corbett, for your testimony. We're inspired by your story, and we wish you the best. And I think you're very fortunate to interact with a group like LifeTrack. I know of their work, and it's an awesome group of people. And thank you for coming, Jayla. Are there any questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? If not, oh, we do. Representative Ephraim?
I can.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Anyone else? If not, and I wish we had had more time, Ms. Corbett and Ms. Toppin, to dive into this a little bit more. Perhaps that will happen in the next committee. But thank you so much for coming. Representative Slawick renews her motion that House File 685 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to Early Childhood Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Abler raised a good issue earlier, and he passed me another. Representative Abler, I took it in the spirit of collegiality. I think what we'll try to do with when we have to lead amendments, knowing that they're coming, is we'll certainly post it for the public that we'll be working off of the lead all amendment. And if we have it available, at least that gives the opportunity for the public to give us a call and say, can we look at it if you have it at that time? I think that's a fair thing to do. So thank you for raising that issue. Members, we are adjourned until next this Thursday. Thank you.